You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 19th of September 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it's the funeral of the Queen today and we will be talking about that later on in Real Britannia. And what I thought I would talk about today is something else that has been going on which has been kept out of the news because of the Queen's funeral. And that is this sectarian violence which has been taking place in Leicester in northern England. Muslims and Hindus have been fighting one another for about the last 3 weeks. This has actually been going on for. White people are not able to go out in the town in the evenings. Everybody has been advised to stay in. And it's really being hidden in the mainstream media. But what it really shows is that when you import different ethnic groups into your country, you're not just importing somebody with a different culture, somebody who looks different, somebody with a different language, but you're also importing the rivalries that they have with the other ethnic groups. And Muslims and Hindus do have a long history of rivalry, which we will look at as we get into this podcast. But first off, let's have a look at what's actually been happening. Mobs of Muslims and Hindus have clashed with police and each other in Leicester, England, with at least one Hindu temple vandalised. And some of you listeners may have seen the footage of this. You can actually see this Muslim walking along on the Hindu temple roof, pulling flags down. And you can see the police are watching this, and there's a huge mob of Muslims that are surrounding this Hindu temple. There are police there, and this Muslim is just casually walking across the roof and vandalising it. The disorder in the multicultural city follows weeks of unrest following a cricket match between India, which is predominantly Hindu, and Pakistan, which is overwhelmingly Muslim. Although whether this is the true root cause of the tensions is questionable, and I think probably this cricket match brought out pre-existing tensions, because there's been tensions between Hindus and Muslims since the partition of India. This isn't something new that's just happened. Now, when we had the partition of India, Muslims all moved into Pakistan and the Hindus all moved into India, and we'll get into the details of that later on, but there's been this anger between these two communities ever since then. The latest outbreak of violence on Saturday saw cars flipped and what Leicestershire police vaguely described as a man pulling down a flag outside a religious building, which is what was happening with the Hindu temple, with the force studiously avoiding mentioning that the man in question hailed from the Muslim mob and that the religious building he vandalised was a Hindu temple. Indeed, the mainstream media also appears to be extremely reluctant to describe clearly the nature of the clashes, with both the BBC and Sky News producing reports on Saturday's unrest that managed to get all the way to the end without once mentioning that the people involved were Muslims and Hindus. And quite clearly, their excuse for doing that will be that they don't want to increase community tensions. They don't want to give ammunition to the far right. But really, they should just be reporting the news. And if we are having tensions between communities in one part of the country, then that is what the news should be. They should not be covering up for it and pretending that it's just white mobs that are actually doing this, when it's not. It's Muslims against Hindus. And this really does show that multiculturalism doesn't work, because Muslims and Hindus are essentially the same biology, but it's just a different religion. And I guess it's fairly similar to Catholics and Protestants and the sort of problems that we had in Northern Ireland. Even though the Irish and the English are essentially exactly the same ethnicity, biologically they are essentially exactly the same, yet because they have different ideas about religion, then we have this sectarian conflict. And you have the same thing here with Muslims and Hindus. The BBC described the mobs as being comprised merely of hundreds of people, mainly men, with the reader left to divine who was fighting from a single reference to the aforementioned cricket match and the fact that they quoted Muslim and Hindu community leaders as calling for calm, while Sky's article did not use the terms Muslim or Hindu even once. British writer Ben Sixsmith described the BBC coverage as having been deliberately written so as not to inform the reader of things. Patrick O'Flynn, a former member of the European Parliament, said the publicly funded broadcaster's coverage may as well have been written in code. And of course, this is what they do. Every time we see that multiculturalism is not having a positive effect, it's not actually being of benefit to the country, the journalists will just try to cover it up, and they won't actually give us the details of who it is that's actually responsible for causing this trouble. One of the most recent instances of this was this young girl that was shot and killed in Liverpool, and we had no description of the person that had shot and killed her. I think we have now seen some footage, some camera footage, and the guy isn't white, and that was the reason why they didn't give us a description, because they wanted to just cover up the fact that multiculturalism has a negative effect. Nick Timothy, Chief of Staff to Theresa May, during her time as Prime Minister, suggested that the BBC thinks it is helping by writing up news stories while conspicuously not telling the reader what is actually happening, but added that in his view, such reporting actually makes things far worse. I mean, it does. It basically shows that there is a conspiracy amongst the mainstream media to keep the truth about multiculturalism from the viewers. Multiculturalism is not good for anyone. I mean, do you think it's good for the Muslims to have the Hindus attacking them in Leicestershire? Do you think it's good for the Hindus to have the Muslims attacking them in Leicester? It's not good at all, is it? And if we didn't have multiculturalism and we just lived amongst our own people, these sort of things wouldn't be able to happen. One figure who was brave enough to criticise a specific group was the Member of Parliament for Leicester East, Claudia Webb, who continues to sit in the House of Commons despite having been ejected from the Labour Party on whose ticket she was elected following a criminal conviction. And we've talked about her here before on the Daily Nationalist. She was convicted for threatening to throw acid over a love rival. Webb, like the police and media, kept her description of the people actually involved in the violence vague, but she did call out supposed far-right elements, who she alleged are intent on using social media and other online communication to incite religious and racial hatred, to cause fear, alarm and distress, and in order to provoke a reaction. Well, you could say I'm a far-right element, and I'm certainly not talking about it now to cause fear, alarm and distress, or to provoke a reaction. I'm talking about it now to highlight the problems that are associated with the government policy of multiculturalism, because the aim is to change that policy, change the government's policy on immigration, get them to beef up control of our borders, get them to accept that multiculturalism is not good for anyone. It's got nothing about trying to cause fear, alarm or distress. And quite clearly what she is trying to do is to distract from what's actually going on and get people to be annoyed at white people instead, the so-called far-right element. Leicester is a shining example of how people from different cultures can live together side by side, she says. Our diversity is what makes Leicester special. We are the city where the minorities make up the majority, and we are richer for this vibrant exchange of cultures, she added, in defiance of the clear evidence that Leicester's different ethnic and religious communities are not exactly holding hands around the campfire at present. So she's talking about a vibrant exchange of cultures, and what we're actually seeing is a violent exchange between cultures. The media and authorities were taken to task on their politically correct handling of the story at length by the SW1 Forum, which highlighted the bizarreness of their decision to beat around the bush, when anyone capable of going on Twitter and searching Leicester Muslim or Leicester Hindu will quickly find a wide range of videos which quickly make it apparent that this was a sectarian riot, and it's a sectarian riot that's been going on for 3 weeks now. They suggested that Webb trying to rope the far right into the narrative suggests just one possibility, that this is being deliberately censored so as not to allow right-wingers to present these events as a negative effect of multiculturalism. They added that while it was possible that journalists worry about further inflaming community tensions, that should not excuse failing to report the basic facts. And of course, that is what they will say. They will say they don't want to cause any more community tension than there already is. But is it going to cause community tension? I mean, surely if they say it's Hindus and Muslims, then the representatives of the Hindu and Muslim community might try to solve this problem. White people are obviously going to avoid that area. They're going to avoid becoming involved in anything like that. I mean, really, you should be warning people about this. And what we've seen Muslims, and I guess probably Hindus as well, but we've seen Muslims from all over the country heading to Leicester to take part in these riots. Well, as I said, this isn't just to do with a cricket match. This is to do with when Britain gave home rule to India. And what happened was, as soon as Britain moved out, India voted to cut itself in half, basically, and you had Pakistan and Bangladesh would be for the Muslims, and northern India would be for the Hindus. So let's have a look on Wikipedia and what that has to tell us about the partition of India. On 16th of August 1946, a direct action day was called for, with the stated goal of peacefully highlighting the demand for a Muslim homeland in British India. However, on the morning of the 16th, armed Muslim gangs gathered at the Ochterlony Monument in Calcutta to hear Hussain Shaheed Shiraradi, the League's chief minister of Bengal, who, in the words of historian Yasmin Khan, if he did not explicitly incite violence, certainly gave the crowd the impression that they could act with impunity, that neither the police nor the military would be called out, and that the ministry would turn a blind eye to any action they unleashed in the city. That very evening, in Calcutta, Hindus were attacked by returning Muslim celebrants, who carried pamphlets distributed earlier which showed a clear connection between violence and the demand for Pakistan, and directly implicated the celebration of Direct Action Day with the outbreak of the cycle of violence that would later be called the Great Calcutta Killing of August 1946. The next day, Hindus struck back, and the violence continued for 3 days, in which approximately 4,000 people died. And that's just according to official accounts, both Hindus and Muslims. Although India had had outbreaks of religious violence between Hindus and Muslims before, the Calcutta killings were the first to display elements of ethnic cleansing. Violence was not confined to the public sphere, but homes were entered and destroyed, and women and children were attacked. The communal violence spread to Bihar, where Hindus attacked Muslims, to Noakhali in Bengal, where Muslims targeted Hindus, to Garhmachevar in the United Provinces, where Hindus attacked Muslims, and on to Rawalpindi in March 1947, in which Hindus and Sikhs were attacked or driven out by Muslims. So this is the first instance of the violence that is taking place, and we see that the Muslims are wanting their own homeland. I mean, it is always about ethnic groups wanting to be with their own people, and it starts a civil war if you have more than one ethnic group in one area. And as I say, what we have here that separates these ethnic groups isn't biology, it's religion. It's because one group was Hindu and Sikh and Jain and Buddhist, and the other group is Muslim. So obviously the solution is to give the Muslims their own separate homeland. But all sorts of problems came about because of this that were unforeseen. In June 1947, the nationalist leaders agreed to a partition of the country along religious lines in stark opposition to Gandhi's views. The predominantly Hindu and Sikh areas were assigned to the new India, and predominantly Muslim areas to the new nation of Pakistan. The plan included a partition of the Muslim majority provinces of Punjab and Bengal. The communal violence that accompanied the publication of the Radcliffe Line, the line of partition, was even more horrific. Describing the violence that accompanied the partition of India, Historians Ian Talbot and Gurupal Singh wrote, "There are numerous eyewitness accounts of the maiming and mutilation of victims. The catalogue of horrors includes the disemboweling of pregnant women, the slamming of babies' heads against brick walls, the cutting off of the victim's limbs and genitalia, and the displaying of heads and corpses. While previous communal riots had been deadly, the scale and level of brutality during the partition massacres were unprecedented. Although some scholars question the use of the term genocide concerning the partition massacres, much of the violence was manifested with genocidal tendencies. It was designed to cleanse an existing generation and prevent its future reproduction." And remember, this took place after Britain left India. British rule had actually been preventing something like this from happening. "The partition of British India split the former British province of Punjab between the Dominion of India and the Dominion of Pakistan. The mostly Muslim western part of the province became Pakistan's Punjab province. The mostly Hindu and Sikh eastern part became India's East Punjab state, later divided into the new states of Punjab, Haryana and Himachal Pradesh. Many Hindus and Sikhs lived in the west, and many Muslims lived in the east. And the fears of all such minorities were so great that the partition saw many people displaced and much intercommunal violence. Some have described the violence in Punjab as a retributive genocide. Total migration across Punjab during the partition is estimated at 12 million people. Around 6.5 million Muslims moved into West Punjab, and 4.7 million Hindus and Sikhs moved into East Punjab. And they were not prepared for this at all. They thought that what would happen is Pakistan would be predominantly Muslim, but there would still be some Hindus living there. And India would be predominantly Hindu, but there would still be some Muslims living there. But once this happened, all the Muslims that were in the Hindu area headed for Pakistan, and all the Hindus that were in the Muslim area headed for North India. The newly formed governments had not anticipated and were completely unequipped for a two-way migration of such staggering magnitude, and massive violence and slaughter occurred on both sides of the new India-Pakistan border. Estimates of the number of deaths vary, with low estimates at 200,000 and high estimates at 2 million. 2 million people slaughtered in this sectarian war once the British had left India. The worst case of violence among all regions is concluded to have taken place in the Punjab. Virtually no Muslims survived in East Punjab except in Malakotla and Nuh, and virtually no Hindu or Sikh survived in the West Punjab. Lawrence James observed that Sir Francis Mudie, the governor of West Punjab, estimated that 500,000 Muslims died trying to enter his province, while the British High Commissioner in Karachi put the full total at 800,000. This makes nonsense of the claims by Mountbatten and his partisans that only 200,000 were killed. So there we go, between 500,000 Muslims and 800,000 Muslims were killed trying to make their way in to the Muslim area. And you can dare say that it must have been the same number of Hindus. I mean, if they're saying 800,000 Muslims, then it would have been 1,200,000 Hindus if we take the 2 million figure as being the one. So this so-called rivalry that we are seeing in Leicester, this goes back. This goes all the way back to here and probably before then. Well, there was also a lot of violence against women. In contrast to earlier riots, women were victimised in the Direct Action Day riots in Calcutta. Many Hindu women were kidnapped during the Noakhali violence. Anti-women violence occurred during the 1946 massacre of Muslims in Bihar, and thousands were kidnapped just in Patna district. Muslim women in Bihar committed suicide by jumping into wells. In November 1946, Muslim women were subjected to stripping, nude processions and rape by Hindu mobs in the town of Garmukteshwar. In Amritsar, Sikhs paraded naked Muslim women who were then publicly raped before being set up fire to on the street. And this is serious stuff. And having to jump into the well and commit suicide rather than avoid being raped. And of course, if they were raped, then their own people wouldn't have them back afterwards because they saw that they saw them as being defiled. Systematic violence against women started in March 1947 in Rawalpindi district, where Sikh women were targeted by Muslim mobs. Numerous Hindu and Sikh villages were wiped out. Huge numbers of Hindus and Sikhs were killed, forcibly converted, Children were kidnapped and women were abducted and raped publicly. The official figure of death in Rawalpindi stood at 2,263. Before further attacks, many Sikh women committed suicide by jumping into water wells to save their honour and to avoid conversion. Sikh political leaders had considered plans for the eventual expulsion of Muslims from East Punjab in case of a partition leading up to the event. Tara Singh, a member of Sharamani Akali Dal and the principal Sikh leader during the partition, said, "We took the decision to turn the Muslims out," years before the event, intending to oust the Muslims in East Punjab to provide lands for the incoming Sikh population from West Punjab. Several districts in Punjab, including Patialia, Faridkot and Nabga, were governed by Sikh leaders and reported to have been arming and providing safe haven for Sikh marauding groups in anticipation of partition. I mean, anyone who is thinking that I'm just going to be blaming Muslims for this, that is not correct. It was Muslims and Sikhs and Hindus that were all involved in doing this. The violence was also perpetrated on an organised basis, with local men taking Hindu and Sikh women from refugee trains, while one observer witnessed armed Sikhs periodically dragging Muslim women from their refugee column and killing any men who resisted, while the military sepoys guarding the columns did nothing. Both Sikh and Muslim communities also cited revenge as a reason for their attacks. The scholar Andrew Major notes that the large-scale abduction and rape of girls seems to have been part of a systematic ethnic cleansing in the Gurgaon region on the outskirts of Delhi. There was a nude procession of Muslim women in Amritsar. So they're just trying to humiliate the women from either side. I mean, the levels of hatred that there are in this is just phenomenal when you think they're pretty much the same biology, the Indians and the Pakistanis. They're the same biology. It's just they have a different religion. Although many influential men, such as deputy commissioners and police officials, tried to prevent abductions or rescue the victims, many other men abused their positions of authority, such as the Maharaja of Patialia, who was holding a Muslim girl from a reputable family. Known perpetrators included police officials, landed magnates, and Muslim League members, as well as criminal elements. Armed Pathans in particular were considered the worst offenders. Particularly in the Rawalpindi district, a large number of non-Muslim women from Kashmir were abducted and sold in West Punjab. And these sold women often ended up as slave girls in factories. But I thought slavery was all done away with, and it was just white people that had slaves. By early 1948, Pathans started abducting even Muslim women. In the East Punjab, local police and the Indian military frequently engaged in the abduction and distribution of Muslim women, besides the Sikh Jathas and refugees from the West Punjab. According to Anis Kidwai, the better stuff would be distributed among the police and army, while the remaining were distributed among the rest of the attackers. And of course, he's talking about women there, the better stuff. In the villages around Delhi, police and army soldiers participated in the rape of Muslim women. The exact figures of abducted women are unknown and estimates vary. Leonard Mosley wrote that in total, 100,000 girls were abducted on all sides. The Indian government estimated that there were 33,000 Hindu and Sikh women in Pakistan, and the Pakistani government estimated that there were 50,000 Muslim women abducted in India. Andrew Major estimates that 40 to 45,000 women in total were abducted in Punjab during the partition riots, with approximately twice as many Muslim women as Hindu and Sikh women having been abducted. Masroor estimates that 60,000 Muslim women were abducted, while Begum Tasaduq Hussain estimated that 90,000 Muslim women were abducted. So a lot of women kidnapped and raped on both sides. Others estimate that more Hindu and Sikh women were victims of violence as compared to Muslim women. For instance, Avashi Bhutalia, who specialises in partition violence against women, says that anywhere from 25,000 to 29,000 Hindu and Sikh women were concerned, as compared to 12,000 to 15,000 Muslim women, numbers which have been endorsed by Indian scholars Roshni Sharma and Priyansa Mathur Vilaf, as well as historian Anvesha Sengupta. So they're saying it was more Hindus and Sikhs that were actually taken than Muslims. But you can see that there is an intense hatred here between the Muslims and the Hindus. And this is what happened in India when they were living side by side. They had to split the country in half. 2 million people probably died. 20 million people ended up having to move. It was the biggest displacement of human beings, I think, in all history. And now we've imported both of them, and we've got both of them living side by side in Leicester. And for the last 3 weeks, this has been going off. These old rivalries have flared up. And that is what you're always going to get with multiculturalism. You are importing the rivalries, the conflicts, all the problems that one ethnic group has with another ethnic group. You import that into your country. I mean, we also have problems with some of these African nations that are at war with one another. Well, finally here, I would like to take a look at another article which looks at the reasons for this sectarian violence. It has been reported by the Leicester Mercury that the recent escalation in community tensions started after the Asia Cup cricket match between India and Pakistan in the United Arab Emirates on August 28th. Before the weekend, it was reported that a total of 27 people had been arrested. Another 15 arrests have recently been made after further public disturbances in the Asian-dominant areas of East Leicester, such as Belgrave. So this has now been going on for 3 weeks. We've had all these arrests. And what this author thinks this is down to is this councillor, Claudia Webb. And this is the one that I quoted earlier, who was blaming the far right, essentially, for the problems that are occurring between the Hindus and the Muslims. And this journalist says, under the leadership of Jeremy Corbyn, Labour parachuted then Islington Borough Councillor Claudia Webb into the constituency of Leicester East, to the dismay of the local party and some in the city's Gujarati Hindu communities. Webb was part of an emergency motion passed at the 2019 Labour Party conference, which called for an international intervention in territorially disputed Kashmir. And Kashmir has Muslims and Hindus in it, and the Pakistanis say that Kashmir should be a part of Pakistan, and the Hindus say that Kashmir should be a part of India. So again, we have a rivalry that is occurring in another part of the world that is affecting things in Britain. Sundeep Meghani, a former Labour councillor and parliamentary candidate who ran for selection in Leicester East, described Webb's selection as a slap in the face for the Indian community. In response, organisations affiliated with the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, that's the BJP in India, that's the nationalist party that is fronted by Modi, such as the Overseas Friends of BJP UK, called on British voters of Indian Hindu origin to turn their backs on Labour and offer their support to the Conservatives. With the rise of Hindu fundamentalism in India under Gujarat-born Prime Minister Narendra Modi, the interference of BJP-affiliated organisations has heightened the risk of divisive communalism shaping local politics in parts of inner-city Britain with diverse South Asian populations. The arrival of subcontinental-style sectarianism in Leicester has seen an escalation in religiously motivated public disorder. While Islamists have intimidated Hindus, vandalised a mandir and destroyed saffron flags of religious significance, pro-Hindutva marches have taken place through Leicester's Muslim-dominant neighbourhoods with the chanting of Jai Shri Ram, meaning glory to Lord Ram. It is a religio-political slogan which has increasingly been employed in India for the perpetration of communal violence against the country's non-Hindu minority. So the Hindus are chanting this phrase that is used before kicking out the Muslims from that area. And the Hindus are obviously upset because they were supporting Labour, but now this Claudia Webb that's been put in there, she doesn't want to see India have Kashmir. So you've got all these geopolitics that are affecting this situation in Leicester as well. Leicester was once viewed by social cohesion experts as the jewel in Britain's diversity crown, but it is now becoming an example of how foreign-inspired sectarianism and religious extremism can take root in diverse parts of the country where there is a clear absence of effective socio-political leadership. But there's also a clear absence of any ethnic solidarity, is there? Because what you have there is you have a multicultural area. So you have different ethnic groups in that area. Some of these ethnic groups are mortal enemies with each other. And periodically, that is going to flare up. And there is nothing you can do about it apart from separate the groups. I mean, all of these problems we have imported into our country that come along with multiculturalism, it's just ridiculous. And when we try to talk about it, we get accused of hate speech. But all we're trying to do is to solve the problems of the country and to affect government policy. We need to change our policy. We need to change our immigration policy. We need to change our multicultural policy. I mean, if we can't encourage people to go back voluntarily, then the next best thing that we could do is to have separate areas for the different groups. You could have multicultural cities, but make sure that outside the cities is kept for the indigenous folk, so that we can live in our communities, in homogenous communities with our own people. And do the same for these other ethnic groups. If they wish to stay in the country, have them within their own communities, and don't encourage them to leave those communities. I guess it would be much easier to do somewhere like America. We have lots of space. I mean, over here in Britain now, I think we're 80% white, 20% non-white, but it is all based in the cities. So what they would need to do is just segregate the cities so that you have an area for Muslims, an area for Hindus, an area for blacks, and try to keep them in those areas. I mean, obviously, it's not the best solution. The best solution is to encourage people to go back to their ancestral homelands with voluntary incentives. And also, if you were to teach them about how they would be so much better off amongst their own people, that they'd be so much happier, they would have a much better sense of community, they'd have a much higher level of trust, there would be much less crime. If we were to promote that instead of promoting multiculturalism, I think a lot of these people would want to go back to their ancestral homes anyway, especially if they were offered incentives to do that, because everybody would much rather be living amongst their own people than putting up with multiculturalism. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.